This episode is brought to you in part by Thomas Nelson, publisher of I Want to Matter, Your Life is Too Short and Too Precious to Waste. Written and narrated by New York Times bestseller Kathy Lee Gifford. Available now everywhere you get audiobooks.
Put your headphones on.
Yeah, what's your Wi-Fi? I'm just thinking ahead.
It's complicated. I'll get it to you in a minute. Why don't do one thing at a time here?
Got a niner. Okay. It's got a niner in it.
What's going on with this?
Okay, so I'm out of the office this week.
Okay.
Not recording an episode of Cultivated. And so my two friends... My best friends, one of whom is my wife.
Who's your best? Who's better?
I think we know the answer to that. I know which one of the two of you I like the least. Especially because you made us wait 15 minutes.
Can I do this?
Because you had a phone call.
Should I move this?
You're fine. Okay. That sounds good.
Okay.
So you guys are here. This is Lachlan Coffey and Sarah Cosper, my wife. And they wanted to stop in and encourage you folks to listen to previous episodes of Cultivated if you haven't heard them yet. And they wanted to share some of their favorite moments. Who wants to go first?
I am a huge fan of Cultivated and all that's occurring here. The very first thing that is on the top of my mind is the Brett Lott episode, because I think it frames up so well what Cultivated is attempting to do, which he's an author, and what he won the Oprah Award. What is that?
I don't think that's a thing. He was on Oprah's book club.
Yes.
A selection for her book club.
He's one of my favorites.
And his book became an international bestseller. And yeah.
Fantastic guy. And the interview is so interesting because we live in... The phrase that I'm hearing again and again is we live in a post-Christian world. And you asked him from a literary standpoint, as an author, does he feel that tension as a Christian author?
I'm not going to go into details, but I've had things happen where, because I'm a Christian, I'm distrusted. And the whole idea of academia is this: you're the smartest guy in the room, and you went to college, man. You got your bachelor's, you got your MA, you got your PhD. You are the man. You're the king of the particular little quadrant of the universe that you've mapped out and want to be the king of. And so you have a whole... Man, I'm getting in trouble for saying this, you know, but you have a whole campus full of kings marching around. And my king is not me, and that bothers people, because what it says to you, who are saying you're the king, is, you know what, I don't believe you're the king either. And it really, you know, makes some people angry. So there is that. Now, on the other hand, I have not had many problems, because, and I don't know how this is going to sound, but if you have the chops, if you do what you do well, and for me, I don't do it for my glory, I do it for the glory of God, but I do a good job doing what I do, then you have the chops, and then you have a kind of respect that people will have. But if you hide behind being a Christian as your, you know, why I'm getting, you know, not getting tenure, or I'm not getting published in that journal, or this sort of thing, then you've got a problem on your hands. Which is why, you know, I'm going to be in all kinds of trouble, but, you know, it's trouble for the Lord. I don't care. But a lot of people grouse about Christian writing, who are Christians, who don't get the, you know, the notoriety or the publishing in there. People who blame, you know, their lack of success on the world being against Christians. What people aren't recognizing is you're not doing it well enough.
Which goes so well with something that you say often, Mike, which is Christians should work in a way that if they were to be removed from the world altogether, there would be an obvious void.
Brett Lott was one of the first one that came to my mind, too. And I love how he talked about his routine and his ritual and how important that is. Kind of like he has almost a liturgy of what he does to prepare to write.
I have a very definite routine. I have to be wearing my pajamas, which is basketball shorts and a t-shirt. I have to be wearing my smart wool socks. I get up, I make my pot of coffee and take it upstairs, and then I spend time first praying, and then I sit down and go through what I've written the day before. I put on my headphones, I listen to music. Each book that I write has a kind of soundtrack to it. It's a different collection of tunes that I play relentlessly. By the time I'm done with a novel, I will have listened. You know, I had the little playlist. How many times you've listened to this? It's like 989 times. And then while I'm doing that, I'm going through what I've written the day before. And then, you know, kind of ease into the language, getting into the story and seeing what's happening.
I think Jackie Hill Perry and Sandra McCracken, I liked hearing from them and how they create things and how being a mother didn't stunt them in that, didn't take anything away, but actually made them more aware of, you know, God's love and how they can make more art because they got to be a mom. And Mike, you say with Sandra about how culture likes to take that away and likes to say that, you know, you have to put everything aside. And those two conversations meant a lot to me because of that.
After I had children, so my kids are 7 and 9, that actually was a very fruitful time musically as well. Like, I think that those years that I thought, oh, I'm just going to be, you know, doing laundry and piles of dishes, it's like it was that, but there were also songs coming left and right. And I didn't tour as much, so there was different modes of output and input. But since that time, I think the creativity has continued to increase. And as a woman, that feels really significant to know that even when you give yourself to the art of caregiving in a way that being a mother does, you know, it's not something to be afraid of, but it actually causes multiplication of your heart. And it's like this, is it in Isaiah where it says, widen the stakes of your tent, you know, like make more room because God is gonna fill it. And I think in a sense, when we give ourselves to love and we say yes to self-sacrifice in those ways, we end up receiving a lot in the process, which is counterintuitive.
Yeah, that's what I was just gonna say. It's really counterintuitive because even just sort of the cultural narrative of, you know, you have kids and your life is over.
Yeah.
You have kids and they're all consuming and you don't have time for anything anymore.
Yeah.
But for you, you didn't experience it that way.
There's fatigue and there's a more of an urgency. So if I have an idea, I gotta find a little window to chase it down. And that's harder to do with two young children. But it kind of invites them into it as well. And it probably keeps me from being as codependent a mother as I would naturally be, because there's not just complete preoccupation with one thing, whether it's the music or the family. It's like you just can't control it all. So you have to kind of learn to play and learn to be present in it, you know, with what you're given.
I felt the same. I related as a mom. Just from a mom perspective.
It's pretty sure you're going to say that.
That's how long we've all known each other.
That's right. We knew that joke was coming. Saw it like a train.
I remember just some moments that I really enjoyed that weren't necessarily like thought-provoking, but just like I laughed or I really connected with, or whether it was, do you remember when the Attorney General Gonzalez shared about the 9/11 story and where he was? It was insane.
Where were you on 9/11?
I gave a speech. I was in Norfolk, Virginia. I flew out of Dulles Airport about 7:30 that morning to give that speech. And that's the same airport that American 77 flew out of, which is the airplane that crashed into the Pentagon. That plane took off within an hour of my plane, so I was in the terminal the same time as the terrorists, and I've often wondered whether, you know, that our paths cross, that our eyes meet. So I get to the hotel in Norfolk where I'm speaking, and the first tower has already been hit. So I get on the phone with my deputy who's in the situation room, and we weren't quite sure what was happening. And then I finished my speech, and by that time the second tower has been hit and we know we're under attack. And so I spend the day trying to get back to the White House.
Mm.
By the time I got to the airport, they had shut it down, so I'm stranded. And I was traveling with one of my lawyers, and we ran into a naval officer from Norfolk Naval Station who gave us a ride to the naval station. I went to the base commander and showed my credentials and said, can you help us get back to Washington? And we waited for several hours just watching TV like everyone else. Our communications were spotty at best, which is kind of frightening. Obviously, it's a lot better today, but we realized we had some serious challenges with respect to communications. And finally, the Navy got clearance to fly me back in a Navy helicopter. So they flew me to Andrews Air Force Base, which is where they hangar Air Force One. And then there was a White House van waiting for me, and they took me to the White House. And I went to there's a bunker in the east wing of the White House where Cheney was at and other senior members of the administration. And so I went there and I spent the rest of the day just going back and forth to the Situation Room, to my office on the second floor of the West Wing, to that bunker, just making sure all the legal issues were being addressed. And then about 7 o'clock, I got word that President Bush was coming home. He had began that day in Florida. When I'm asked, I'm often asked, of all the things you've done, what stands out the most? And it is standing on the Oval Office porch the evening of 9/11 and watching Marine One bring President Bush home that day. I'll never forget that. It was such a historic day. And here's the Commander-in-Chief coming home. And this is someone that I've known from our days in Texas. And I was very, very curious about what I would see in his face. And as soon as I saw him, I knew we were going to be okay. I mean, he was determined. I couldn't see anger, but I know he was he was mad. And we set to work doing what had to be done to protect our country.
It's just amazing to have a guest like that on the podcast. And then to hear him recount where he was and how, and watching President Bush's face as President Bush walked off the chopper, the plane.
Chopper.
The chopper.
Thanks, Arnold. Get to the chopper.
But seeing President Bush walk out and Attorney General Gonzalez kind of judge how his face was.
I think so many people in our age, give or take 20 years, it was such a pivotal day, especially we were all about 19 or 20 when it happened. And the three of us, I mean, not everyone that listens to the podcast. But... you know, to have that episode, and then I think the week later you had Melanie Penn on, who's a friend of ours, but she talks about how her mom was like calling because she was supposed to be at work exactly across the road from where the planes hit. And so I don't know, it was just really, because that's such a pivotal moment for so many of us to hear two accounts from people who had such a personal, like they were right there.
I also was thinking back on episodes, and I one of the best laughs that I had in the whole Cultivated, we're on the third season right now, yeah, is Alyssa Wilkinson's interview. Mm-hmm. And she makes a reference to the cinematic universe of God's Not Dead. And I was cracking up.
God's Not Dead, for instance, as a film or as a franchise, as it's becoming, the God's Not Dead cinematic universe. In that cinematic universe, atheists are hateful, always. Christians are not, always. And, you know, in the first film, spoiler alert, they literally kill the antagonist at the end of the film. It's like a revenge fantasy, right? These are films that are political, and not big P, but little P, about our team winning and the other team losing. And I think that shapes our imaginations in really dangerous ways.
Like the atheists are killed at the end. Right. Like the main protagonist?
Antagonist.
Or antagonist.
Pro's good, anti's bad.
Okay, pro. Oh, I think I've made some bad decisions.
That's certain.
But they're killed at the end, almost like a revenge fantasy movie. And I just thought that was hilarious to think about the cinematic universe, because what, there's like three of these? I don't know.
Right. All right, so we've got a week until the next show comes out. If you're going to recommend just one, your number one, go listen to this one. What is it?
There's four. So some people might be driving and need two people to listen to. Start with Andy Crouch, which is the end of season two. No, end of season one. And that one like covers so many things. And then listen to Steve Taylor, which is another two episode. And it kind of shows you the vast majority of, or you know, encompasses all that I think Cultivated is.
So it's technically two people. It's just four episodes.
Oh, okay. I got lost in the math on that one.
Yeah. Want me to draw it out for you?
me do counting.
I will whiteboard this for you after we're done, so you know how that was four.
Well, if she gets two, I'll throw out two. The first one is Show Baraka. I think is a fascinating episode because one, it goes through some controversies of his life. It goes through how he creates. And then also his music is so good. And I had never heard it before, Cultivated.
Fellas, I'm ready to get up and do my thing. I want to get into it, man, you know.
Go ahead.
Like, you know I'm the man, don't you?
Yeah.
Can I count it off?
Uh-huh.
1, 2, 3, 4.
I'm grooving for the activists and graduates. I'm an advocate for those feeling abandonment. In the favelas and slums, the ghetto inhabitants. It's like, can anything good come out of Nazareth? The only thing good came out of Nazareth.
This is the groove, tell me, can you handle it?
I'm schooled in the ways of runaway slaves. I'm brave, I'm unchained, I'm Frederick Douglass with a fade. I kidnapped greatness and left no ransom. I'm the grandson of Muhammad Ali, but more handsome.
And it is really, really intelligent music. Very... It's just really cool music. And then also...
That was really articulate. The way you were just like, it was really good.
Sorry.
It was really, really good. It was really very good. It was so cool.
Have you seen the one...
Guys, this is so cool.
Have you seen the movie with... Is it Viggo Mortensen? Is that his name?
Mortensen.
He goes to Thornton's. Viggo Mortensen has his family in the woods. And he's like raising his kids in the woods. Have
it's like
you seen
Captain
this?
Something.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
I haven't seen it.
One of the things is like they all have to do book reviews, and one of the kids is like, "That was my favorite chapter." And he says, "Why?" And he says, "The kid says it's an amazing chapter." And he like says, "Amazing is not a descriptor or whatever."
The story is amazing.
Thank you.
This is a great podcast.
Self esteem.
This is a great podcast. Everybody's so glad they're listening right now.
It was a good story until
you told it.
Until I told it. Is he on the? Is he not on the podcast?
He's not on the podcast, so that one doesn't count.
Is this live?
I'm gonna have to beep out your swearing. All right, go ahead. What's the other one?
You're not gonna put this in here.
Oh no, that's in there. Okay.
So we'll Show Baraka and the other one would be that Brett Lott episode because I think it does a great job at encapsulating what Cultivated is doing. So great. I would definitely encourage that.
Great. Thanks for coming by. Thanks for sharing. I agree. Everybody should go listen to Brett Lott. You should go buy one of his books. Go get The Hunt Club. It's really good. We'll see you next week.
Also, can we talk about how on our wedding day you guys were at, what's it called? Mr. Gaddy's?
Gaddy Land?
Yeah, we did. We went to Gaddy Land and we beat Jurassic Park.
I was printing out the papers.
You ate Long John Silver's on our wedding day, too.
I was buying lipstick and toothpaste and printing out our...
This is tomato tomatoes, isn't it?
What's it called? The paper that you hand out at your
bulletin.
Wedding. Yeah, that's what I was doing and I had to call you and ask how to spell someone's name.
And we were probably like, stop calling them. We're trying to shoot the dinosaur. It's the T-Rex.
Oh, man.
We beat it.
We need to do that again.
Then you got married.
And then we had married. So many breadsticks and cardboard pizza.
All right. See you next week.
First he sings, and then he goes. And what it means, it's hard to know.
Big thanks to Lachlan and Sarah for making time to come in and share their favorite episodes. Really want to encourage you, go back and listen to the others if you haven't. You've got time this week, because we don't have one this week. Today's episode was recorded and mixed by me. Our music, as always, is by Dan Phelps. Our theme song is by Roman Candle. Go to the website, sign up for our newsletter. It comes out every week with a column by me and interesting links. And stay tuned. We'll be back in 1 week with a new episode.
This episode was brought to you in part by the Lord of Spirits podcast. Many Christians yearn to break free of the influence of secular materialism and to understand the union of the seen and unseen worlds as made by God. What is the spiritual world like? Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.